Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you this Wednesday morning, February 19th. All kinds of cool things happening in the Old Pueblo this week. Certainly high season in the 520 as we've got rodeo going on, the Remains of Gem show, right? All kinds of neat, exciting things happening. The license plates have all changed colors. There are just people everywhere. Cyclists, Matt. Like, I am seeing so many cyclists in St. Phillips Plaza, I can't even begin to describe
it. Wow, sure. You're right on the river, the Huckleberry Loop there.
Absolutely. And so there are just multicolored jerseys everywhere, bikes. Like, if all the months could be February in Tucson, I think this would make this economic development thing a pretty easy task for us.
Thirsty bicyclists.
Yes. I think we're a little more concerned about the other months of June, July, August, and September, perhaps, than we are February. But either way, lots of cool things happening in the Old Pueblo this morning, and bringing you the top four things and food for thought of what you need to know in the Old Pueblo out here today. The Pima County gun ordinance was shot down yesterday by Pima County Superior Judge Greg Sakal. Last year, if you remember, the Pima County supervisors voted 4-1 to make it a fine of up to $1,000. If you didn't report a firearm stolen to Pima County. Of course, the one lone dissenting voter, and that was Pima County Republican Steve Christie. And the Superior County, the Superior Court judge struck that one down yesterday. No word if Pima County is going to appeal that one yet, but certainly they are looking into, you know, what you might have in your gun safe over there and if you are reporting that one. And so a lot of interesting statewide implications. There are essentially state laws preventing municipal governments from doing exactly this, which is making laws that supersede the state laws. And so it's going to be interesting to see if Laura Conover chooses to fight that particular ordinance that was overturned by Superior Court Greg Sakal yesterday. Speaking of other semi-political news, House Bill 2235 is making its way through the House. For those who haven't paid attention to that one, it's one that's near and dear to my heart as someone that drives to Phoenix quite regularly. 2235 happens to be a House bill called the Slowpoke Bill, and this one would penalize drivers for hanging out too long in that left lane on I-8, I-10, and I-40, very specifically. Too long in that left lane, hanging out over there on your cell phone might get you a $200 fine. Kind of interested in seeing this one as someone that makes that journey to Phoenix on I-10 for a while. That's actually a serious problem.
It is, and it's a safety issue too. I mean, higher speed traffic does stay left, and if you come up upon somebody that's going below the speed limit or not keeping up with traffic, that can be the left lane is a passing lane. That's the bottom line of it. That's the purpose of the inside lane.
Without a doubt. And so this one will be interesting to see if it makes its way through, but with a 42-17 vote, there is bipartisan support
observation. I didn't notice that part. That's great, yeah.
Right? So ultimately, like, this one isn't coming down party lines. So many of these votes seemingly come right down party lines, and it seems to be absolutely bipartisan that nobody likes you hanging out in the left lane. So we're pretty excited about that one here on The Morning Voice. It won't exactly help my commute, I think, on Aviation Highway, as it is limited specifically to these three major state, interstate roads, I should say. But nonetheless, excited to see this one make its way through on its way to the Senate right now. Hoping the governor won't veto that one. Got my fingers crossed. Coming up this week in Tucson as well, or in the next couple weeks in Tucson, is the World Baseball Classic qualifiers. This is one we all need to get behind. We've lost baseball in the Old Pueblo now for a number of decades. You've heard me cry about this one over and over on Jump in Tucson and here on The Morning Voice too, because gosh, do I have a soft spot for, you know, America's pastime over here and wish that it could be happening in these February and March months here in Tucson. And so from March 2nd to March 6th, we're going to have a number of international teams at Keno Stadium. I've got four tickets to give away. I've got two that I'm going to give away this hour right now to the next caller on 520-790-2040. And we'll give away two more at the top of the hour. Those are sponsored by both Union Hospitality Group and C. Charo Restaurants. My good buddy Ray Flores wanted us to bring up that World Baseball Classic, give away a couple tickets. You'll have to pick up those paper tickets from Union Public House over here because they're actually paper. So I'll set that one up with Matt. So the next caller, top of the hour, 520-790-2040, getting yourself a pair of tickets to the World Baseball Classic. So stay engaged with that one, Tucson. And then finally, one of the things that I think is a major cultural event, something we should all pay attention to, even though it's not directly related to Tucson. And that happens to be the hockey finals that are coming up tomorrow at 6 p.m., this Four Nations event. Now, I talk about hockey a lot over here on Jump In Tucson and on The Morning Voice because I am a big fan of hockey as a sport. I'm a big fan of the Tucson Roadrunners. We give away a lot of tickets and we talk about this one. But this relationship between the United States and Canada has suddenly reached a boiling point. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, somewhat of a border city, right along the lines of you know, 15 minutes from Canada. And here we are as somewhat of a border town in Tucson. But quite frankly, the relationship between the United States and Canada was never as terse as what it was in Mexico. In fact, in the pre-9/11 world, we often didn't hardly even think of Canada as much of an international border. It was more of crossing the border, say, in between Arizona and California for a citrus checkpoint. And it wasn't a terribly aggressive border checkpoint. And there wasn't the cultural or language differences between the United States and Canada as there might have been between the United States and Mexico. But recently, tensions have reached a boiling point as President Trump has come out and made some comments, not just about tariffs for Canada and a potential 25% tariff, but the idea that somehow Canada might be the quote unquote 51st U.S. state. And I think a lot of Canadians have taken objection to that, and perhaps understandably so, as they're their own sovereign nation. And hockey happens to be their sport, right? The one thing that Canada has actually, in many cases, dominated over the U.S. on an international play level. The NHL's All-Star Game has decided to take a break this year and instead bring us this Four Nations tournament. Nobody gets too excited about most sports all-star games. If you watched the NBA all-star game this weekend, it was an act of absolutely not playing defense. If you look at the NFL, they've moved away in the Pro Bowl from actually playing a real football game and turned into a flag football game and a skills exhibition. But come to the NHL, essentially all-star game, this international tournament that happened this week, and there were three fights between the United States and Canada inside of the first 9 seconds of that game. The Canadians booed the U.S. national anthem at this game in Montreal, and the Americans came out swinging. Now, in life and in culture, I don't purport to always say that you should come out swinging, right? Fighting is not exactly the best example that we should put out there for our kids and our family. However, there does come a time when you're allowed to fight, when you're allowed to fight back. And that happens when somebody else throws the first punch, right? In hockey, it's really the only remaining sport that you can actually get into a fight. And there's just like these offsetting equal penalties for both partners, or maybe a 2-minute additional penalty for instigating, right? But in life, sometimes you do have to fight. And this makes me think of the city of Tucson here as well, too. How many punches can we take in the old Pueblo before we, too, can't turn another cheek and instead turn to fight back? There's being a good citizen. There's being a good sport, right? And not every single move should lead to fisticuffs. We saw Caleb Love sort of turn the other cheek the other day when he was headbutted at an Arizona State game. But every once in a while, you've got to dig deep inside yourself and say, was that acceptable? When do I get to draw the line and say, you know what? You've now crossed that and it's time to fight. We took that opportunity at Union Hospitality Group when we helped sue the Pima County Board of Supervisors and Health Department 4 years ago when they made an illegal COVID curfew, shutting down every restaurant in the old Pueblo after 10 p.m. I didn't want to fight the government. I didn't want to be the guy that comes to fisticuffs, quite frankly, with the people who regulate me.
Right.
But every once in a while, man, you've got to look deep inside yourself and say, you know what? You've crossed the line. You're getting a 2-minute penalty for instigating either way. And now that you've thrown a haymaker at me, I'm actually allowed to take another shot, right? And to come back into this battle.
This is after you were told to close completely.
Yes, very
okay,
much
so. It's, and then they're trying to, you know, figure out, well, is it safe to, why is it not safe to go out after 10 p.m.?
Yes.
Right? So, and so this, again, this was not the first shot they took at the business owners like yourself. This was on top of a shot, on top of a shot, on top of a shot. And finally, it's like, okay, I'm going to, you got my attention, you know, now, and now I'm going to push back.
Yeah, tensions boiled over and it became time to fight. And that happened in this hockey game last Saturday. If you take a peek, the United States and Canada literally had these three fights inside of the first 9 seconds. And ironically, both those teams have lined up to meet in the final game tomorrow in a battle that not just has, doesn't just have sports implications, but truly has like national pride implications lined up.
It seems like the first time since the U.S. and the Soviets in hockey in the Olympics.
Absolutely.
It really seems like that all of a sudden again.
And so while mostly I'm going to recommend you go and support the Roadrunners and all those local games over here, if you have any modicum of interest in hockey at all, there's going to be an absolutely amazing game tomorrow. It'll be well after the Tucson Rodeo Parade. United States, Canada, battle for all the marbles on that one. That's your fourth thing to keep an eye out for in Food for Thought. But when we come back after the break, we're going to be talking a little bit more food. I've got the amazing operator, Gabriel Moreno from Jaime's Pizza Kitchen on Congress. Coming up, we're going to talk all things downtown Tucson restaurants. When we come back after the break, you're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM, your morning voice. Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 AM. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we are joined live in the KVUI studios with Gabriel Moreno, owner of Jaime's Pizza Kitchen in downtown Tucson. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming in. I know it's tough to get restaurant tours up this early. We switched to The Morning Voice over here as opposed to jump in Tucson. You don't think about that extra 2 hours, but when you're working until 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, these are seriously early hours out there.
No, it's a pleasure to get up this early and see the break of dawn, which we don't usually. So thanks for the opportunity.
No, I get to see the break of dawn often on the other direction, you know, on the parabolic curve here of a night and close a bar down and then watch us wake up in that regard. So great to spend a little time with you this morning, have a morning coffee with you. Let's talk about Jaime's Pizza Kitchen, though. Where are you guys located?
We're down on Congress at 312 East Congress, right next to the Rialto Theater.
Right. That's a pretty hot location, right? I mean, this is ground zero for Tucson's like happen in downtown hipster area, no?
I think so. It's a ton of foot traffic and, it's people from all walks and it's what a wonderful view right out that front window staring at Hotel Congress.
When I was downtown the other day and I was looking at the sign for Jaime's Pizza Kitchen, it said since 1989. And I was like, no, don't correct me if I'm wrong. Like your store, Jaime's Pizza Kitchen hasn't been there since 1989, but you've got a history going back that far, right?
Yeah, no, this is a continuation of my grandfather's brand that started in 1989 over on 4th Avenue.
No way. So where was the store located on 4th Avenue? What's that location now?
The location now is Sky Bar and Brooklyn Pizza. It started as Jaime's Mexican Favorites back in 1989 and then turned into Jaime's Bar and Grill shortly after.
So cool. So what does Grandpa think about Jaime's revival over here?
He's pretty excited. He's definitely been a big part of it. Spends a good amount of time at the shop, and I think it takes him back to the 1989 Jaime. Reminds him of what it's like to kind of go in and work with a crew and have some people under you. And you know, he's very headstrong, so this is a good opportunity and position for him to come in and make sure that his voice is heard and that he's seen. So I think he's having a good time with it.
I love it. That's such a cool backstory over here, Gabriel. So one of my favorite things about the restaurant business is how some of the most successful operators work their way up from the bottom, right? You tend to have winners in the restaurant business that literally came from being a dishwasher, a waiter, a prep cook, a line cook, a busboy, rather than being a doctor, a dentist, an orthodontist, or something along these lines. Give us a little bit of background about how you got your start in the restaurant business.
No, absolutely. It started with my dad was AM for my grandfather's bar. And during the summer times, we would go to work with him. I mean, it wasn't a bar in the morning. It was a Mexican restaurant. So we spent a lot of time just kind of around the culture, around the people. Some point in the 90s, Brooklyn Pizza opened up next door to us. We rented out the space. It used to be a little market called Jet Market my grandfather owned. And that was my first taste of watching people toss dough. And shortly after, I started working for my granddad in his restaurants. When I was old enough to get a job, I went to work at EG's, as a lot of Tucsonans do. And that was an introduction, a little bit of time at Chipotle, learning a little bit about scratch cooking. And then when I was 18, I got a job at a place called Rockin' Pizza. And
that was on Broadway, if I remember correctly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, in the Midstar Shopping Plaza over on Broadway and Swan. And it was almost a no look back, you know, again, fell in love with it.
Well, it's such a great story to hear about people that literally started at the bottom so that you can have empathy with your teammates that are now doing the jobs that you've hired them to do as well, too. You had a big run with Pizzeria Luna as well, too, right?
Yeah. No, that was an amazing opportunity that I got right at the end of 2017 going into 2018. I was kitchen managing for Grimaldi's in Tucson, which, you know, we all love and miss. Once we finished up over there, the gentleman who opened Pizza Luna propositioned me to come in and assist getting Pizza Luna, you know, up and running and dial in some recipes. And that was probably the most important part of my journey was the years that I spent getting Pizza Luna put together. I really got to learn more about high heat controlled cooking and long fermentation. And that's when, even though I'd been in pizza for, you know, almost 15 years at that point, that's when the dough science started to make sense. And maybe I fell in love at 18, but I was completely overtaken with it at, you know, early 30s when I started to learn really what I was doing all this time.
I love Pizzeria Luna. I'm a big fan of development on Tanga Verde over there on the east side, and you'll hear me wax about that one as well too. As I remember from the mid 90s, that being Restaurant Row and all these cool, amazing, hip restaurants in Tucson, and it kind of took a turn for the worse for a while when Pizzeria Luna opened up. I thought that was the best pizza on the east side of Tucson in that time. So did Matt over there too.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah. You said Pizzeria Luna. That's all I need to know. I'll be at Jaime's Kitchen. Yeah, right. That was excellent.
So that operator, Mark Frankel, I believe his name is, mm-hmm. right? Mark is Bubby's Bagels now, and he's got two locations. He's got the original Pizzeria Luna location on the east side, and then he's got a Bubby's Bagels just across the street from me, Kitty Corner, in the River and Campbell Shopping Center, where P.F. Chang's and Sullivan's and whatnot is as well, too, called Joshler Village. And so those are great locally owned bagel shops over there, some of the best bagels in Tucson. It's neat to get bagels that aren't coming from, quite frankly, the chains that we all know and permeate over here, and instead are locally owned. And so I imagine you learned a lot from Mark, huh?
I did. Again, he was such an enthusiastic person to be around, and I got to be there in the beginning of Bubby's Bagels, and that was another wonderful story of someone starting kind of at the bottom working pizza with us, who also gained a passion for dough. I'm not sure his position now, but the operational partner, Kyle, was just another pizza guy that we taught how to kind of work dough and make pizza, and he took it and absolutely ran with it. And so because of Mark's optimism for the Tucson food scene, that's where we got the chance to get Bubby's rolling, and Kyle really spearheaded that whole thing to turn it into, in my humble opinion, the best bagels in Tucson, maybe in Arizona. They're really great.
See, look at that. We're talking to local restaurateurs over here, Gabriel Moreno from Jaime's Pizza Kitchen, and our conversation has segued into other great local restaurants and restaurateurs over here. Rather than self-promoting, we're actually talking about other people that are doing it right. And I think Mark Frankel and Bubby's are doing it right over there, and I wish them a tremendous amount of success. And it's pretty cool to hear that you came out of that school as well, too, because that was some pretty great pizza they had over there at Luna.
Yeah, like I said, it took us a little bit of time to figure it out and dial in the dough and just find out who we were. But once we found it and we were getting the responses we were getting, that was, again, it came from a different way of looking at how we and how I learned to do pizza. It was just a 24-hour quick ferment. Yes, you know, quality ingredients still, but the emphasis wasn't really on days and days and days of getting this dough together before it's ready. And that's something I had the opportunity to learn from Mark and from Pizza Luna.
So there's so many different styles of pizza, Gabriel. What would you describe the Jaime's pizza as? Like, because, you know, there's Detroit-style thick crust pizza we've talked about. There's Roman-style pizza. There's Neapolitan-style pizza. There's so many. Like, what's Jaime's?
I'll give you the profile that'll help, you know, people understand, and then I'll tell you what I like to call it. It crosses somewhere in between Neapolitan and a New York. It has the structure of a New York style pizza. You can order it for delivery or take it home, and it's not going to flop over like you might get with a wood fired pizza, which is amazing the moment it comes out of the oven, but really difficult to deliver to enjoy 20 minutes afterwards. However, because of the long fermentation, we are getting a beautiful blistering on the outside of the crust, a gorgeous honeycombing on the inside of the crust, which will fool a few people, especially when they're getting it fresh, to think that there's a big, beautiful wood-fired oven back there, when in reality, Jaime's Pizza Kitchen was built on what we could afford, which was a steel Baker's Pride oven and a 60-quart Hobart. So nix the spiral mixer, take out the high-heat wood-fired oven or coal-fired oven or state-of-the-art electric oven, and we were able to design a dough that got what we were looking for. So I like to call it Tucson style because it is what I could make with what I could afford.
I love it. Hey, you can make some great pies out of a Baker's Pride Y600 over here. I've done that myself, so I'm a big fan, actually, of those ovens. And I think it's the Indian, not the arrow, as they might say in this one, and what you're putting together here. And so, you know, these are some great pies at Jaime's, and I salute you for really jumping into the downtown restaurant scene as well too. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk with Gabrielle about that, opening up downtown right on Ground Zero, right next to the Rialto. It's Grant Kruger. It's Gabrielle Moreno from Jaime's Pizza Kitchen. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. You are listening to 1030 AM The Voice. Every Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 AM, we're bringing you The Morning Voice. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, we've got Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. On Wednesdays, you get me, and we get to talk all things local restaurant, business, and politics, and that funky intersection of how they come colliding together quite often. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley from the University of Arizona. This is your Morning Voice. We've got another segment, however, with Gabrielle Moreno, owner of Jaime's Pizza Kitchen, located at 312 East Congress downtown. Welcome back, Gabriel.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, so located downtown is a challenge and a curse and a blessing, I think, for restaurateurs, right? We've got a tremendous number of restaurants downtown, but not all of them have been so famously successful. Pizzeria Bianco only made it about 18 months downtown. And for those that are keeping score, this is James Beard, award-winning chef Chris Bianco. There's a three-hour wait every day for his restaurants in Heritage Park in downtown Phoenix, and out of business in 18 months in Tucson. How's that pizza scene going down there for you? Like, how are you guys able to stick it out longer than a James Beard award-winning chef?
I think that we have a little bit more of an advantage than he did. The streetcar project isn't as fresh as it was. The implications from COVID and what that did to restaurants isn't the same as what it was. And downtown is starting to pop in a way that I don't think it has in you know, maybe a decade plus. So we're very, very fortunate to be on that, you know, upward swing of, I think, downtown getting repopulated. I don't know how we're so fortunate that people are so generous to support us the way that they have. And we're just very grateful to have made it this far, and God willing, many, many more years. But it's a daily grind, and it's a new lesson every month. Getting the data from year to year, which we're fortunate to have now, has been a huge asset in how we're operating, and how we're reaching people. I think that realistically, it's been just the effort of the small crew that I have to work with what we've got and who we've got, instead of, you know, anticipating we're gonna have these huge days. So over prep, over par, over staff, over everything. It's been a lot of little calculated moves to make sure that we're keeping our chin above water while we're trying to define who we are in that space.
So how do you guys get your deliveries downtown? I know in my restaurants in St. Phillips Plaza, pretty much every weekday from about 7 to 10 a.m., there is nothing but 50-foot big trailers loading down on these places for all of our goods, sundries, alcohol, you know, everything involved. Like downtown, that's got to be a lot tighter. How do you guys pull that off?
In the space that we're in right now, there is a large lot behind us that the trucks are generally lucky enough to be able to back into. So that is one huge advantage that we do have that not a lot of the folks downtown have. I mean, we see it all the time right there in the center lane, a Shamrock truck with the gate down, and they're rolling food in and out, playing Frogger in between, you know, in between traffic, trying to get it done. But like I said, we've been incredibly fortunate. So the deliveries are not quite as difficult as they would be for everyone else downtown.
How about parking for both staff and customers? Like, you've got this small lot behind you, but that can't possibly fit all of your customers, no? Like, where do the customers park? What's the easiest way for somebody that wants to experience Jaime's Pizza Kitchen to park their car?
There are a few ways. So obviously there's a lot of street parking downtown, and it's reasonably affordable. Into our blocks, there are lots of garages. There's a garage right across the street from us at the AC Hotel. They're littered down Broadway and open lots. But my recommendation is, if you're going to spend a little time there, go park on 4th and either enjoy something and come underneath the bridge, or go park on 4th where you can park as long as you like and jump on the streetcar and have a little adventure that'll take you right downtown. It's still free. It crosses right in front of us. As I believe a lot of our customers, again, they're downtown for work, they're downtown for play, they're downtown for a visit anyhow, so we're fortunate to grab them while they're there. And then our regulars, they're just savvy. They know where they park, they know where they're, you know, Tucsonans know how to navigate Tucson, but even with that being said, downtown is a little bit of a problem when it comes to parking.
So you mentioned 4th Avenue, right? And it's a, kind of an interesting topic of conversation, because I've heard through the years that 4th Avenue has been on sort of a downward spiral, that the rise of downtown and the rise of university and the connected streetcar between them actually has a lot of streetcar passengers just sort of passing through 4th Avenue. We saw just a couple days ago the announcing of the closure of Hermanos, right? Like a really beloved restaurant on 4th Avenue. We're going to bring that one up and a food for thought at the top of the hour. But having had a store, right, Jaime's Mexican Favorites, Jaime's Bar and Grill, located on 4th Avenue, being right next to it as a downtown operator, what do you see the trajectory of 4th Avenue for restaurants in Tucson?
It's hard to speculate, but what I'd like to see is what it was really when it was kind of booming in the mid-90s. 4th Avenue was the spot. It was where everybody went, and it was full of life and culture, which it still is. I think that as downtown, the beautification project continues and people are become more familiar with it, it'll kind of be that Strip and Fremont feel, to where, you know, 4th Avenue is kind of like old Tucson culture, and downtown is now getting that big, beautiful facelift. So I would hope that as that continues, downtown becomes, and I'm sorry, 4th Ave becomes what it was at that time, and it is more that that strip for locals, with budding, successful, long-standing businesses, like Hermanos. And I hope to continue to see success for and from them. It was very sad to hear that they were closing.
Do you think that part of downtown's success comes from the Rio Nuevo investment in this? Last week on The Morning Voice, we had Edmund Marquez, co-chair of Rio Nuevo Multi-Purposes Facility District. And for those listeners that don't know, that happens to be a tax increment financing district that sort of funds sales tax creating businesses to pop up in locations that otherwise had been empty or abandoned for some time. But it's specifically located downtown and on the Broadway stretch going east. Did you get any help from Rio Nuevo? And do you think that Rio Nuevo is buoying downtown at the expense of 4th Avenue?
That's a question. We haven't received any assistance, but I think that what they've done for downtown has really just sped up the process of getting it to where it is now and where it's going. I'm not sure if I think it has affected what has happened to 4th. I think that kind of turning that question around and saying, does 4th need a little bit more attention? And is that something that should be in the conversation? That's an absolute. Absolutely, we do need to pay a little bit more attention to 4th Avenue. Not to say we should pull any resources or anything from downtown, because the project is working. It's going well. I would only hope that consideration will extend and that 4th Avenue will get the attention that it deserves in the future.
No, I think that's a great answer to that one over there. I'm surprised that you guys haven't got any assistance on that one. We ought to get you and Edmund together in some capacity over here, just given your awesome location right next to the Rialto as well, too. You know, that success would be paramount to that entire block success. And so, you know, maybe that's a conversation offline we should set up at some point.
I'm always open to a conversation with anybody who's in the local Tucson business and restaurant scene.
No, there's so many great operators downtown, and we've had a number of them here on Jump in Tucson, our previous show, and I think we're going to have a continued number of them here on The Morning Voice as well, too. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to have Jeremy DeConcini, owner of Moto Sonora Brewing, coming up a little bit later today as well, too. A pretty interesting character over there. This guy has traveled all over the globe in cool FJ40s, Land Cruisers, motorcycle tours in Africa and Mexico, and he's going to tell us about Moto Sonora, located on South Park in Tucson. And today we've got Gabriel Moreno from Jaime's Pizza Kitchen. Who are some of your favorite operators downtown?
Downtown, some of my favorite operators downtown, you know, Chef Anthony Drongul, the current reigning Tucson Iron Chef. He as a chef and just as a friend, he's someone I bounce things off of, and I appreciate the time he has there. But operators a little outside of the restaurant scene, Tucson Galleries inside of Proper Shops, Tom Heath and Tony Ray Baker, those are just some fantastic Tucson business people who are in it for the community, in it for the art community, in it for just Tucson in general, and kind of the lower guys. So those Tucson Gallery specifically has been a big inspiration for us, just in how big their heart is for this town. So it doesn't have to be food, just the consideration for Tucsonans and the arts. I gotta say that they're probably the most inspirational for me right now.
I love it. Those are great answers. Well, don't go anywhere. We've got one more segment with Gabriel Moreno, owner of Jaime's Pizza Kitchen on Congress downtown. Coming up after the break, you're listening to Grant Kruger and Gabriel Moreno on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We are live in studio with Gabriel Moreno, owner of Jaime's Pizza Kitchen. Going to have a great day here in Tucson. Matt bringing us that rockin' weather, 76 degrees. That is Chamber of Commerce weather.
Nice,
or should we call it Sun Corridor weather now?
Monday,
I don't know.
Tuesday.
Right. Excited for that one. Hey, lots of cool things happening downtown, Gabriel. I understand that Hub just opened back up after a really long remodel on Thursday the 13th, the day before Valentine's Day. No pressure, guys. Did you guys see any activity from that one?
Downtown was packed the entire weekend. I think everybody downtown saw some action, but I gotta say, Tucson must have been excited to see Hub opening back up, because the traffic for Hub, you go across the street from where we are, it was packed, intense, and we're just so happy for them.
No, you guys are obviously on ground zero downtown, right? Like, I think of pretty much like that intersection, like 5th and Congress, as being the spot. You know, anything within a couple blocks of that on Congress is the hottest of the year. That's the strip, as you called it, you know, between the strip and Fremont. I like that. I might be stealing that from you. I'll share the copyrights with that one. And so you're right on the strip over there, right next to the Rialto. How much does the Rialto play into your business? Is a big happening show drive lots of business for you? Are there specific genres of music that people buy pizza for and certain ones they don't?
Interestingly enough, again, pizza is versatile. Pizza goes, everybody eats pizza. So the Rialto has a huge impact. I mean, we put the concert calendar on our schedule and schedule accordingly for the Rialto, because it could be, you know, make or break sometimes. Those big shows, we might get, you know, the majority of our evening business from that pre-door pop and that post-show pop. It's huge.
Right. And that makes it tough to staff for, though, too, when you've got those peaks and valleys, right? I've always said the restaurant business would be easy if everybody came in spaced 5 minutes apart like an assembly line, but it doesn't work that way. It's all or nothing, this huge gang rush at the door, and then nothing, right? And it makes it so difficult to staff for.
It does, but because we're a family restaurant, myself, my wife, and my sons are where we need to be when we need to be there. So we're extra bodies, so that if there is overflow needed, I got some built-in assistance there.
So a couple weeks ago on the Jump in Tucson show, I talked about the opening of Desert Shark, which was in the former Lemon Shark Poke location located at Tucson and Grant, right? Right in the same sort of intersection where Culinary Dropout happens to be. I think there's an Orange Theory in that strip mall as well, too. And you're doing a collab with that owner now. Tell us a little bit about that.
I am doing a collaboration with Fabian of Desert Shark. He makes the most amazing poke sauces, and I had a little leftover after some poke, and took it to work. Thought, you know, this might be all right on some wings, and I was right. He, his sauces are absolutely out of this world. So I'm running the Shark Bite wings right now using his signature Shark Bite sauce. If you haven't tried them, come try them. He's working on a few other things in the lab. And it's a collaboration that I'd like to see go on for a good little while between us. He's a fantastic business person and just a good guy all around.
No, I love these sort of collabs between various local restaurateurs. You might think of us all as competitors in some capacity. And while I suppose at the cash register, there might be some part of that, the truth is I think we're all brothers and sisters in arms in this business together, quite frankly. And it's great to see so many groups out there working together, the Tucson Originals, the Tucson Restaurant Advisory Council, the Gastronomic Union of Tucson, the City of Gastronomy. There's a lot of organizations. Oh, I forgot, America's Best Mexican Food, right? And Visit Tucson. So many organizations working to keep us all collabing together. Pretty cool to hear about you guys and Desert Shark working together as well.
Yeah, no, the food scene in Tucson, you know, we all are trying to make our mark and make our money, but especially the pizza scene, this is, like you said, a band of brothers. This is, we are all in it together. I've not gotten any bad vibes or any, I mean, we all do work together. We borrow cheese from each other. We take each other tomato or basil, whatever's needed, even whole slice right down the road. And Falora, Travis and Ari are good friends of mine, and they've been supportive since I really got into this. The Tucson scene and the people are just fantastic.
No, I love Travis. We worked together, actually, Travis Evans and I, for about 8 years at Union Hospitality Group. He did our baking over there as well, too, before teaming up with Ari at Falora and Whole Slice downtown. And I love stories like this where people started off as a teammate and end up opening their own restaurant. Like, super rad. Like, there really couldn't be anything that makes me prouder than seeing our own, you know, proteges rising up and making their own establishments. And we've had quite a few on this show as well, too. And I'm super excited to have you here today. Give us a quick rundown about where our guests can find you guys again.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously at our location, 312 East Congress, right next to the Rialto. On the social medias, we're on Facebook and Instagram at Tucson Jaime's. You can give us a call, 520-849-5908. Or check out our website, and you can order through there for pickup or delivery. That's TucsonJaimes.com. That's how you find us.
So give me your hours. Like, how long are you guys open for? Do you close any days of the week?
Yeah, we're closed on Mondays to do a little bit of a dough reset. It's a long fermentation. We are open Tuesday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m., and then on Sunday, 12 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Okay, so you're open at 11 a.m., so you're doing lunch downtown as well, too. That can be a bit of a challenge sometimes. Like, the lunches seem to do well when they're located near the courthouse, right? There's always seemingly a crowd for what used to be the Brugger's over there, or the Baggins, the unfortunate souls that have been drawn into jury duty, or those who are being processed by the court systems for these quick lunches. Like, what are you guys doing for lunch to draw people a little further down the road in Congress?
Nothing will bring business more than being able to get a side entree and a drink for $10. So we do have a lunch special where you can get a slice with one topping. It's a choice of our Old World, our Classic, or our White Base with one of our signature toppings, one of our specialty salads, one of three of our specialty salads, and a fountain drink for $10 plus tax. I think that is what drives our entire lunch. Is it's very fast, it's very affordable. You come with a group, you're out in 15 minutes. So I think that's what assists us in our lunch.
Wow, that's an unbelievable price, particularly in today's market, right? Like, you're beating fast food at that point.
That was the goal. We need our food to be accessible. We're not making pizza just for those that have $50 to spend every lunch. We're making pizza for everybody. So the goal is, if you can, we have happy hours. Happy hours bring slices down to $3, garlic knots down to $3, half off bottles of wine. That's between $3 and $5. It's whatever we can do to, again, maintain our accessibility to everybody, because that's what we're trying to feed, is everybody.
And when is that happy hour over time? Is that 3 to 5?
3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Yeah, lunch special runs from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. We jump right into happy hour from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. And then just dinner service after that. However, on Tuesdays, there is an all-day special where you can get a half-off bottle of wine. So if you're looking to go grab pie, you know, get a bottle of wine, we can always cork it for you. But it's a half-off bottle of wine on Tuesday and every day during happy hour.
I love it. Well, Gabrielle, thank you so much for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. Listeners, don't go anywhere. We've got another hour of the Morning Voice coming up. The most interesting man in the world, Jeremy DeConcini from Moto Sonora, coming up after the break. Thank you, Gabrielle. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. You're home for local news and talk. Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, on this second hour of our segment over here. As promised on the first segment, we're giving away a pair of tickets to the World Baseball Classic qualifiers. Those are coming up March 2nd through 6th. So your first caller at 520-790-2040. Our call in line, the illustrious Matt Neely Esquire will be taking your call, and he'll prepare a pair of paper tickets for you. I'll have them ready for pickup at Union Public House tomorrow for you guys, or we could arrange that one offsite because they do happen to be paper tickets. But I love to see our involvement in that World Baseball Classic qualifiers. It's a cool thing to have America's pastime in the old Pueblo. So do participate. Pay attention to that one. Go down to Keno Sports Complex and enjoy that particular event so that we can have this happening in future years. The last thing we want to see in the old Pueblo are businesses closing. And unfortunately, in our Food for Thought on the Restaurant segment this week, we've had a pretty rough day in the Tucson hospitality and restaurant scene. First and foremost, Hermanos on 4th Avenue has announced that they're closing. Hermanos was a pretty cool restaurant. Mark and Eric Ehrman, right? A pair of brothers, hence the play on words, Hermanos, without the H over there. A pair of brothers that put their dream together to not just to make a cool restaurant, but make an amazing cocktail bar in what was Portal as well, too. And it really breaks my heart to see that when a reasonably well-executed business like that doesn't make it, it makes me worried about so many of these other ones here in the old Pueblo as well. On the previous hour, Gabriel Moreno from Jaime's Pizza Kitchen and I were talking about 4th Avenue and maybe how the scene on 4th Avenue is changing a bit. Perhaps the rise of university, the rise of downtown have in some way, shape, or form actually hurt 4th Avenue. Maybe the streetcar is just zipping people in between these two other locations and not helping. Because it's pretty sad to see, again, a really, really well-executed concept by community-involved operators who are doing things, in my humble opinion, the right way, not make it. On top of that, we got Le Cave's Donuts saying that they're going to close as well, too, by the end of this week, or as soon as potentially the 21st of February, or when supplies run out. This kind of commentary like often surprises people that restaurants can't live their life out to a specified destination weeks or months in advance. But what happens is you start to lose your staff members quickly. There's no question that the team members need to work. That's why they're there. And so when they know you're going to close 1 month from now or 6 weeks from now, well, they have to jump ship. It's not really their fault. They've got to look out for number one over here. And so it's very often that restaurants can't actually even make it to their announced closure date because, quite frankly, once you've lost 30, 40, 50% of your crew, you don't even have enough staff to keep it open. And so often you see restaurants either locked out by their landlords or just sort of suddenly, abruptly closing in the middle of the night. And the owners are often vilified for not notifying their staff or something along these lines. But quite frankly, it's very unusual for an operator to be able to Babe Ruth and call their closure many months in advance and actually live out the terms of that lease and agreement and have their staff members stick around long enough to do it. In fact, one of the only examples I could think of in Tucson was Acacia, our predecessor in St. Phillips Plaza. When he moved to the Gallery Row concept, like he lived out the life of a 5-year lease and no joke, like 5 months in advance in like January, he announced he would be closing in May and they made it. The staff, because Albert was such a great guy, actually stuck around for him and helped him take that restaurant to its conclusion before he moved off to Oregon. A lone example of this happening. So when you hear of restaurant closures coming up, don't vilify the owners on this one. It truly might not be their fault that they can't even make it to the announced closure date just because of the way these things staff and need to be supplied as well too. It's something that just might not happen. On cheerier notes, an opening is happening up at 610 East Tanga Verde. You know how I love always talking about the east side. This happens to be the former EG's location. And what best to go into a former EG's location, but the former EG's operators. That's right. Slice and Ice is coming to the East Side. They're going to take a stab at their pizza and ices, claiming to use the original EG's recipes, and are going to slip right back into a location that was already an EG's before. Talk about an easy enough transition. Talk about just putting a coat of paint on it and opening back up. Slice and Ice coming to the East Side, and we wish them a tremendous amount of success. I'm always a big fan of cool things happening on Tanga Verde. We're working to make Tanga Verde great again and make that restaurant row. And anything popping up over there brings life, light, energy to the East Side. Super excited for that one. And then as well, our craft beer crawl is coming up this weekend. If there wasn't enough events in Tucson, if you haven't had your fill of the rodeo or the gem show on Saturday, February 22nd, Tucson foodie Shane Reiser is putting together the craft beer crawl. This is going to be from 1 to 6 p.m., kicks off at 119 East Tool. Tickets are available on TucsonFoodie.com. All of your favorite breweries are going to be there. It looks like it's going to be absolutely gorgeous weather, a great way to spend the day outside in the Old Pueblo, enjoy a little bit of craft beer as well, too. Now, when I think of great breweries in Tucson, I think of the history of Gentle Ben's, and I think of, you know, how I used to work at, you know, River Road Brewery and Breckenridge Brewery here in Tucson, and I think of like all the neat places that we have over here between Borderlands and Iron John's and Dragoon and whatnot. But there has been a rise of a really, really neat concept on South Park Avenue from a well-known family over here in Tucson, perhaps one of the most interesting people in all of Southern Arizona. This is Moto Sonora Brewery, and we are joined live in the KVOI studios by Jeremy DeConcini from Moto Sonora. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Grant. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on the morning voice over here. So that craft beer crawl is coming up over here. I understand that we might have some Moto Sonora beers available as well, too?
Yeah, for sure. Our spot on South Park is a little kind of far off the beer crawl, so we're going to post up at one of the other participants. I don't know which participant that is yet. It's sort of TBD, but we will be there. We will be participating, and I'll be there personally hanging out and talking beer and story with everybody.
I love it. I love it. Now, you guys have been open since 2020, but I want to back this story up a little bit because there's a lot of backstory and sort of history and heritage to Moto Sonora and how this one came together, right? And a lot of it has to do with your travels internationally. We've had the opportunity to travel internationally to Mexico together, right? Guadalajara.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Right? Like back in the day, 1997,
I think. Man, that was fun.
Right? And so you spent a lot of time traveling through Baja and through Africa. Break down some of your travels and how your background led you to this career in the brewery business.
Well, I'll sort of take it from the beer angle. You know, back when I was growing up, a lot of people get into craft beer through homebrewing. And I had friends who homebrewed in college, and their beer was terrible. So to me, homebrewing was not a path to quality beer. So I had this sort of Bruce Brown, Endless Summer, kind of perfect wave quest that any time that I was traveling, I was always looking for the local beers. And by local, I mean, if you go to Europe, they're going to be European, you know, beers that might not necessarily be local to that city, but certainly nothing like I'd ever tasted. And so from a very early age, and call it maybe 12 years old, going to Mexico with my dad, you know, beer and travel were completely linked. And so there was always just over the next horizon, you know, what's the brewery over there and what kind of cool styles and beers do they have that I've never even tasted before. So some people travel on their stomachs, you know, restaurants and, you know, food. And I also do that. But for me, beer was the through line for all of those places.
I love that connection between like location and beer, right? If you travel from one city to the next, do you really have to have a Budweiser in every city that you go to?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things that Budweiser and the big breweries did was make something very difficult look very easy. So from a technical standpoint, it's very hard to make a Budweiser taste the same in Boston as it does in LA, but that also makes it very boring. You know, you don't want to drink the same beer everywhere you go, or I don't.
No, of course not. In fact, water quality plays so much into this. I recall having worked for Breckenridge Brewery that we couldn't quite replicate the Rocky Mountain spring water with the Central Arizona Project's finest. I know you might find that shocking, but there was a slight variation in water quality there that made for a major variation in taste.
Oh, for sure. And that's one of the things we did down at Moto was we built an RO system so that we could strip out all the you know, mineral laden Tucson city water, and then build back a mineral profile that was unique to us, and so that all our consistency could be there and there'd be a unique flavor profile. It's almost like having your own well.
Yeah, without a doubt. We've had some pizza operators on here before that have bought like the New York water machines and whatnot that are designed essentially to replicate the minerality with water from the East Coast that have gone through those 100-year-old pipes and the interesting flavor profiles that that brings.
For sure. I'm always jealous of like Midwest or East Coast breweries where they just have perfect water coming out of the ground and you just don't even have to touch it. But, you know, we do what we have to do in the desert.
Without a doubt. Now, you spent a lot of time traveling through the desert as well, too, and some pretty awesome tours through Baja California, right, in Mexico?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I was growing up here in Tucson, I started going into Sonora and further south, and obviously we went to Guadalajara down in Jalisco, and then at a certain point I started surfing, and Baja was the next stop, and I was already a motorcycle rider, so that little peninsula is just made for surfing and traveling on a dirt bike. So as soon as I could, I started making the trip. In 94, my brothers and I and my dad even went. We took off from here, went down mainland, took the ferry across to Baja, a place called Santa Rosalia. We were gone for a month just cruising around Baja. And it's crazy to think about it now. No cell phones, no internet.
Right.
No nothing.
The just Wild West.
Yeah,
truly.
Totally. Like, see you in a month, Ma. Bye. You know, but we did it. It was a really, really cool experience.
Well, don't go anywhere. When we come back after the break, we've got a few more segments with Jeremy DeConcini over here. I'm not kidding when I say this might be the most interesting man in Southern Arizona. He's traveled Baja on motorcycle. He's been a Homeland Security agent. He owns Moto Sonora Brewery. The most interesting man in Southern Arizona, Jeremy DeConcini, coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Very excited to be here with you this Wednesday, 7 to 9 a.m. Every Wednesday, 7 to 9, you're getting The Morning Voice. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. On Wednesdays, you get myself talking all things intersection and restaurants and politics. Thursdays, you've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And Friday, Dr. Ed Ackerley, bringing you all sorts of interesting updates from the University of Arizona. But in our segment of The Morning Voice over here, I love to have a bit of focus on restaurants and entrepreneurship. And I think that couldn't be displayed more than with our guest this morning. Welcome back, Jeremy DeConcini, owner of Moto Sonora.
Hey, thanks. Good to be back. Like the Satriani intro. That was great.
Hey, thank you. Thank Matt Neely over there. He happens to be our DJ MC with the most, putting it all together over here for The Morning Voice, keeping all five hosts together. Let's talk about Moto Sonora a little bit more. How did these travels to Baja influence the name of Moto Sonora? Like, where'd you come up with that name?
Well, so craft brew, like as I was talking earlier, that I think beer is a local thing, and particularly for craft brewing, it's a highly local thing. So I wanted a name that captured the local nature of craft beer, and, you know, being in Tucson, but I couldn't just call it Tucson Beer Co. That just seemed just not sexy enough. So, and I also wanted something that captured the spirit of travel and adventure, you know, in the Southwest and in places like Baja and Africa, because I think there's a sort of a common culture there. It's very different than the East Coast. So Africa, I think, shares more in common in a lot of ways with the Southwest than, say, New York does, you know? So we took Sonora, which is obviously, we're in the Sonoran Desert. We're in the next to the Mexican state of Sonora, and we share a lot of culture. You know, our sister city, I think, is Hermosillo, that kind of thing. And then we took the Italian and Spanish prefix moto to suggest this sort of overland travel, be it on a motorcycle, a sports car, a Land Rover Defender, whatever. So, and we also, you know, just from a purely legal standpoint, we had to come up with something that no one had ever done before and hadn't trademarked.
Of course, there are these minor copyright laws, you know, right. These little things there.
It can get in your way. So, yeah, we probably went through, I don't know how many names. It seemed like 100, but it probably wasn't until we're like, Moto Sonora, and, you know, you say it a couple times, you're like, is this good? Is this bad? I don't know. It's kind of lyrical, but it might be too much of a mouthful for people. And in the end, we just sort of took a little bit of a gamble and went for it. And then there's the nice little story where when we went to trademark it, when you send something to the trademark office, they translate it for you. So because your trademark protects you in other languages. And as best as the trademark office could tell, Moto Sonora in both Spanish and Italian means the sound of engines. And I was like, oh, that's perfect.
That's pretty cool. Look at that. That's a great little tidbit right there. A little Easter egg for our listeners on The Morning Voice.
Yeah, it was great. It was a huge bonus.
So that sort of spirit of adventure carries into the name of Moto Sonora. But going back to your history over here, I see that you were a special agent for Homeland Security. Like, how do you go from being Homeland Security into being a brewer? Like, that's...
Well, that's a long trip, man. well, I'll start with how I got into that business. You know, when I was younger, I always had sort of an adventurous sort of spirit, and if I was going to have a career, I wanted it to be something really cool. And maybe I watched too many movies in the 80s. Maybe I saw Point Break too many times. I don't know what, but I decided that a federal agent was a good way to go. And so I graduated college here, went to LA for law school, and then out of law school, joined the Secret Service in LA, blew out my knee in their academy, resigned to take the bar exam and started looking for a new job. Almost went back to Secret Service, but decided that protection was less interesting to me than investigations and kicking in doors and running and gunning. So I took a job with what was then transitioning from the Customs Service to Homeland Security Investigations. And so I was hired as a special agent with Homeland Security Investigations down in San Diego. And I did that for a few years and really liked the work. You know, I didn't mind staying up all night on surveillance, drinking coffee and writing down license plates. And I liked the tactical aspects, the adrenaline, the kicking in doors and the going after bad guys and the running and gunning, as it were. But then after a number of years, I just kind of burned out, you know, looking back on it. This was post 9/11 when you thought Al-Qaeda was going to jump out of every trash can. And we were just working hard and there was no vacation and there was no travel. And there was this inflection point at the World Police and Fire Games in Australia. We were allowed to go, you know, without taking vacation time, because I didn't really have any vacation time. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Australia and compete in the World Police and Fire Games. I don't do badminton. I don't care, whatever. I'm going to compete in a sport. And turns out they had surfing. And I was a pretty good surfer at the time. And so I went and competed. And if I hadn't gone on like a beer bender with a bunch of Australian firemen, I probably would have got a medal. But I took sixth. And then I took a little bit of vacation time and was traveling around New Zealand in a camper van. And I realized that I'd been so consumed with my job that I needed to get away from it. And I really was the guy who wanted to be driving around New Zealand in a camper van. And so I was like, I have to get into entrepreneurship if I want to pursue this kind of life. And well, I couldn't have both.
Well, there's certainly some similarities to staying up late at night and drinking lots of coffee and kicking in doors. I feel like as a restaurateur, I do kind of all of those things. I don't know that I get a badge or a gun, so to say, but you know, we kick in some doors. I look for bad guys at you know, 11 or 12 o'clock at night. As they say, nothing good happens after 10 p.m.
For sure. Yeah, I use a lot of my investigatory skills, you know, in the brewery. You're like, what happened here? All right, let's go to the cameras. Let's see what, you know, like, let's see what went down. So yeah, it happens a lot.
So at what point did you and your brother decide to make the leap then to go into Moto Sonora?
Well, so in 2010, we were in South Africa and we were driving around. We were going to see the World Cup and I was going to surf and we just wanted to go on safari and we'd rented all these trucks and we're driving around Africa and we were drinking all these weird African beers that we'd never tasted before. And we kind of came up with this idea that we would maybe someday open a little like craft beer bar and just get all these beers from around the world. And maybe like as a retirement thing, someday this would be really cool just because beer and travel and all the things that we kind of talked about opening the show. And I was living in San Diego at the time and I was doing industrial real estate, which is a lot of breweries, you know, because brewing is considered manufacturing. My neighbor wanted to open a brewery and I had a building and I helped him build out his brewery and I would occasionally help him brew and bartend and whatever. And I was just kind of experiencing the San Diego beer scene as it was blowing up. And the more I learned about making beer, the more I realized the best beer is closest to the brewery. If I get something from Europe, who knows how it's been treated by the time it shows up at my bar. So I figured if you wanted quality, you had to make it yourself.
Without a doubt. Beer is essentially liquid bread. And as such, it doesn't travel as well as you might think.
Yeah, it's not like wine, you know, which just travels fine. And it sort of shifted from, well, maybe instead of like a retirement thing, maybe we could build a brewery and actually make a living out of it and create this cool sort of experience. If we want to do a European style, we can do it right there and, you know, bring a little bit of that flavor to you. And so this was maybe 2015, 2016. We started talking seriously about it. And then we're like, okay, how do we proceed? And then we just started reaching out to everybody we knew, you know, because it's like putting together a giant puzzle, not even before you even get to the money, just like, how are we going to approach this? And I thought Tucson, my hometown, would just be a great spot for it because it didn't, its brewing scene was still coming up. You know, I mean, when I grew up, there were zero breweries. And then when we were in college, there was General Ben's and Nimbus, and that was it. And, you know, I mean, now there's a lot more, but...
Of course, it was really in its infancy in the 90s. I mean, the world wasn't quite ready for that. Tucson wasn't ready for those breweries yet. I still remember people walking into Breckenridge and seeing this million-dollar mash tun right. brew kettle, and they were so excited to see it, the spectacle of it, but then they would pony up to the bar and order a Bud Light.
Yeah, of course.
That was the way it was in the old days over here. So how'd you pick your location? Like, where did that come from?
Well, some of it goes back to the manufacturing nature of it. You need industrial zoning, you know, so that's why breweries are always in these industrial parks. People are always like, why did they put breweries here? I'm like, because they have to, because it's a manufacturer, like a car manufacturer or whatever. So I just took a map of Pima County that showed where all the industrial zones were, and I saw that zone on South Park. I'm like, it's close to downtown, it's close to the university. And so I just started driving around. I saw the building for sale and said, I think this is the spot, you know. I think I maybe overestimated that location a little bit because we're pretty close to those areas, but, you know, we don't get the same traffic.
So break down your location one time for our listeners over here that don't know where Moto Sonora is located.
Sure. We're 1015 South Park, just south of Broadway before you get to 22nd. So you go under the underpass on the train tracks, which I think is an emotional barrier for some people, but...
barrier over there. Okay.
But you go through and right on left. We're pretty close to Barrio, and there's another new brewery down there called Slow Body. So our neighborhood could use the traffic. So come on down and have some beers. It's a little bit of a brewery district.
That's cool. We've got a brewery district popping up in Tucson over here. I hadn't heard of that last one over there. How long have they been open?
Less than a year.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
LJ was the original brewer at Pueblo Vida, and then he went and cut his teeth at Hill Farmstead in Vermont.
I think so many people underestimate zoning when it comes to these sort of things. Restaurants, bars, and brewery all have specific zoning needs. And without getting too deep into the weeds on it for our listeners, you just can't plop a bar anywhere you want. Just because it's commercial property doesn't mean that you can park a bar or brewery liquor license on, say, Campbell or Speedway in the same way you can plop a restaurant on. There are extremely different zoning rules for that sort of stuff because almost every neighbor wants a cool restaurant in their neighborhood, right? Matt Neely's always asking for more cool restaurants on the east side, but not everybody wants a bar or in some case a brewery right next to them. Well, we're going to talk about the challenges of opening up pretty much the day before COVID started with Moto Sonora Brewery with Jeremy DeConcini, your owner of Moto Sonora. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Jeremy DeConcini on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We've got two more segments with the most interesting man in Pima County. That is Mr. Jeremy DeConcini, right? He has been a surfer. He's been a special agent with Homeland Security. He's the owner of Moto Sonora Brewing Company. His family's got a port of entry named after them. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Thanks. Forgot about that one.
Hey, thanks so much for spending part of your morning with us and our listeners and telling us about all the cool things you guys have over at Moto Sonora. We were talking at the break about the real estate end of these things, right? Like how zoning comes into play, how it's so important to have industrial zoning to do a brewery that you ended up at 1015 South Park Avenue, just south of the railroad tracks. You guys own that building now?
Yeah, that's correct. That was one of the smartest things we did was buy the building because now assuming we can make it through all the challenges, the other, you know, innumerable challenges of running this type of business, at least our rent, you know, won't go up. And that's I know that for restaurateurs and brewers, that's always an issue. Your lease comes up, real estate's gotten more valuable, even though your business hasn't changed, they jump your rent 30%. And that might be the difference between survival and failure. And it's tough because by no fault of your own, you just get priced out of your own building.
Without a doubt. And so often these lease deals on restaurants are the determining factor of both their success and their ultimate demise as well, too. We saw, you know, Armano's announcing that they're closing on 4th Avenue, and that very well could just be a lease deal where they're on a 10-year renewal or a pair of fives, and suddenly it comes due, and the landlord says, hey, guess what? This is going to go up 20 or 30%, and suddenly you can't make it work.
Yeah, I haven't talked to Eric, but that was the first thing I thought when I read that article. I was like, oh, they must hit the end of their lease and their rent jumped and it didn't make sense anymore.
Without a doubt. So you bought that building, did a pretty big tenant improvement on that one, and we're set to open up in March of 2020. And there's this little thing that happened to our economy and the restaurant business around that time. Tell us about how that unfortunate timing worked out for you guys.
Man, that was rough. You know, when you're building anything, and I'm sure you've been through this, there are always delays. We were actually supposed to open end of 2019. But, you know, contractors, construction, it just happens. So we got delayed and delayed and delayed. And then we had our soft opening on a Saturday. And then on Tuesday, they announced the closure of everything.
Yeah. And so that would have been St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2020, a day that will live in infamy.
Yeah, for sure.
Forever for local restaurateurs. So you did your soft opening on essentially the 14th of March, and by the 17th of March, you were closed for COVID.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember I had a meeting with my partners. I was like, guys, should we just mail the keys to the bank right now and just save us the trouble? If we're going to spend 3 years of stress and going bankrupt anyway, why don't we do it now? And they were like, no, we got this. We can make it through. I'm like, okay, let's go.
Oh, my goodness. I can't even imagine what that stress would have looked like with that.
It was tough. It was really tough. And I used to joke that, you know, people are like, well, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know, but we have thousands of gallons of high quality beer. So, you know, we're going
to
be fine.
Right. In the event of an apocalypse, I might have headed over to Moto Sonora over there. You guys are built for overlanding. You've got thousands of gallons of beer. I feel like you guys might have been more equipped to survive the apocalypse than your average restaurant.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That summer, you know, when everything was just going crazy, the Catalinas were on fire, you know, COVID was nuts. And like, yeah, we got a water factory, we got beer. You know, high fences and some cool trucks, we'll be fine.
Yeah, so where's your bug out place if you know, COVID-25 happens over here? Where's the secret hiding spot for the DeConcinis?
Well, I don't know about the rest of the family, but I'll be in Baja.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, you can always, there's a saying in Baja that, like, no matter what, you can always catch a fish. And that's true. I mean, it's pretty bleak out there. It's desert, not a lot of trees, so it's kind of harsh survival. But, you know, the Sea of Cortez is full of fish. There are springs if you know where to find them. And there's, because it's so bleak, there's hardly anybody there. So it's a good place to hide.
So that overlanding culture has made its way into your branding as well, too. If you get a chance to go to Moto Sonora, you'll see cool motorcycles. There was a cool Mini Cooper built up over there, right? You've got a pretty awesome FJ40, I understand.
I know that belongs to Mike Emery from Slow Baja. I've got kind of a secret overland vehicle, because during the pandemic, all those Toyotas got so expensive. I ended up buying a Porsche Cayenne just because I needed a car and because my 4Runner blew up. Turns out those Cayennes are highly underrated. I took mine with some hardcore overland types through the Gran Desierto de Altar in Northwest Sonora, and it did fine.
Amazing. So we're going to have to look out for a secret Porsche Cayenne here. Got it. That's a pretty cool overlander. And so how does that tie into the branding of Moto Sonora? Like, you do a lot of like motorcycle events, a lot of vehicular events over there as well too, rallies and such?
Yeah, we do. We do a track day once a year on our anniversary, which is March 15th next month. We do a motorcycle ride in the morning, and we try and do a couple of sort of, you know, things like that, you know, a couple times a year. We're going to do the Arizona Backcountry Discovery Route or part of it going into the Overland Expo and Flagstaff in May. So we just try and sort of keep the brand tied with the things that we like to do. And, you know, generally speaking, public's invited on a lot of this stuff. So yeah, just reach out to me if you want to do any of those things.
Wow, pretty cool. Amazing stuff. I know as a restaurateur, I don't always get the time to do such things as awesome overlanding trips through Baja or Northern Arizona, but you found the time to also write 3 books. Is that true?
That is true. Haven't had much time to write since we opened the brewery. It's a pretty involved job. But yeah, before we opened, I wrote 3 fiction books following an arc of one character, sort of leveraging my background in the government to create this character that's, you know, very loosely based on me. He's just a little darker, a little more dangerous, a little more interesting, quite frankly.
Could there be more interesting? I've already said, I mean, you're brewer, patriot, author, you know, homeland security investigations agent.
Like I said, I think, you know, it sounds pretty cool when you put it like that, but I'm pretty, you know, mellow person, not enough to make a full book about. But so I took some of the cases that I worked on, or cases that I knew about, or cases that friends worked on, and extrapolated them into these sort of larger sort of plots and conspiracies and James Bond kind of style.
And so what are the name of these books? Like, where can we find these?
You can find them on Amazon, in print and Kindle. I have a couple down at the brewery. You can buy them at the brewery, and it's a series. The first one is called Camino del Diablo, and it focuses a lot on Tucson and San Diego, just because I wasn't sure how good a writer I was going to be. So if I made it very place heavy, at least people from those places might read it and find it interesting. And then as my writing developed, the next one was called Alpine Slide. It's similar. I don't know if you remember back in the 70s, this giant plane load of drugs crashed in Yosemite National Park, and all these like dirtbag climbers got to it before the park rangers did and sold off all the, apparently a lot of dirtbag fortunes were made selling weed in San Francisco that was poached out of Yosemite. So I took this sort of plane crash in the mountains motif and built a story around that. And then the last one is called Late Apex. And this was when I was doing weapons smuggling stuff for the government, and I wanted to make sure that I had the writing chops to take on a big plot like that. And it was about selling these things called triggered spark gaps, otherwise known as a nuclear trigger, you know, to the Middle East to build a nuclear weapon. And so that one, that book travels all over, starts in San Francisco, goes to South Africa, moves all around the world.
Pretty amazing stuff. I don't know that many author, brewer, patriot combos like this whenever. So I feel pretty honored to have you on the Morning Voice over here today.
My honor's mine.
Hey, well, one of the biggest challenges besides for writing books and being a Homeland Security agent is producing quality food, right? All breweries start off pretty much without food in some capacity. You're in an industrial area, right? You don't want to deal with building out a $1 million kitchen. It's both a hassle, a risk, and a difficult skill set to do. But within a period of weeks, customers are sampling your delicious beers and they're like, hey, I'd like a pretzel with that.
For
and
sure.
Pretty soon it's like, hey, I'd like a hamburger with that. And then pretty soon you are a restaurant. And so what do you guys got coming up for food over here at Moto Sonora? Break down what the eats might be.
Okay, well, currently we have Mike's Food Truck. He's a CIA graduate, and that's Colonial Institute of America, not the Central Intelligence Agency.
I had to check
government
there,
types,
given the context.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And he's working with us Wednesday through Sunday through the spring. I have acquired an entire deli setup, and I'm going to build a sandwich shop inside Moto, but this is a new project for me. I don't know anything about it, so I'm learning as I go. I'm hoping to launch this summer.
Amazing. And so it is no small feat to be able to build a kitchen, particularly one like while you're operating and in business right now as well, too. Pima County has a pretty infamous history of going into even spaces that were existing restaurants that were permitted only weeks or in some cases months before and saying, well, I see that you've got these plans and existing setup, but we're going to want a hand wash sink over here and a grease trap over here and a new hood over there. And suddenly it's many hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I'm going to try and work with them as early as I can so that by the time they go to give the green light, we don't have any expensive surprises. So that's, and I'm trying to do this without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars because, you know, you can just get over your skis really fast that way.
Without a doubt. I think most listeners would underestimate just the cost of building a commercial kitchen and the fact of how it doesn't add any value to the mind of our guests. They just assume you have that, right? It's just like
exactly.
The de facto setup. But when you think of what a $100,000 Type 1 Ansel hood with, you know, connected fire suppression actually cost, it's far more than a loaded overlanded Cayenne.
For sure.
And then some, right? And so nobody walks in and goes, amazing, honey, look at this 1,500-gallon grease trap with three compartments. The way this separates grease from the sanitary sewer system, this must be the most amazing restaurant ever, yet this thing costs tens of thousands of dollars.
For sure. Yeah, only restaurateurs would walk in and do that and be like, oh, that's nice. Look at that.
Yes, I am that sicko. I am that remark over here. And I don't want to take our guests too and our listeners too far into the weeds on those specifics, but it is certainly no easy skill set to build and to permit a kitchen inside of Pima County. And that's why you see so many restaurant spaces being recycled over and over and over again, because it's just far cheaper to quote unquote put a coat of paint on it than it is to build a whole new space.
For sure. There was, I don't know, did you ever read you ever hear of Colorado Boy Brewing?
Yes.
Yeah, the guy who started, I can't think of his name right now, he wrote a book on opening small breweries, and his advice was go find a restaurant that went out of business. It's easier to build the brewery in that space than it is to build a restaurant into a brewery.
Without a doubt. I don't think there's any question. That is very sage advice. Well, we've got one more segment of sage advice coming up with the most interesting man in Pima County, Jeremy DeConcini, owner of Moto Sonora Brewery. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we've got one final segment with Jeremy DeConcini, owner of Moto Sonora Brewing. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks. Great to be back.
Hey, so as a brewery, like, you obviously make a grand variety of styles of beers, and I imagine that some of these names come from your spirited travels that you've had. Break down some of the cool styles of beer that you're making at Moto Sonora.
Well, so we do a lot of traditional European styles, and then I think American craft beer has been around long enough that I could say we do traditional American craft beer styles. We don't make anything called milkshake, anything, but we do lots of hop-forward sort of West Coast style IPAs and things. One of our best sellers is called Victory or Death. It's a West Coast IPA. And then we have a hazy IPA. It's also a very big seller called Fog Lights. And then, you know, based on the travel kind of stuff, I mean, that's the sort of racing and automotive thing. Our Imperial Stout is called Road of Bones. I don't know if you know that, Road Through Siberia.
I don't offhand. I haven't had a chance to make that one. I thought that was just a name for the restaurant business and those brave enough to try to pass through this.
Yeah, it's probably both. But yeah, the Soviets built this giant road through Siberia. And as the workers died along the way, they put them in the bedrock of the road. And so it's called the Road of Bones. And the Russian Imperial Stout was a strong beer that the British would make for the Russian imperial court. And so that's why it's called a Russian Imperial Stout. So for our Imperial Stout, I thought of a cool road in Russia and with a long history and thought that would be a cool way to approach that.
And those are big beers, right? Those are high alcohol by volume beers right there. And
yeah,
Imperial
it's at
Stout.
Least 9%.
Right, yeah, a couple of those, and you might not be driving your custom Land Rover home in some capacity.
No, the Russians like to drink.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so where can consumers get your beer beyond just Moto Sonora? Is this available on tap in other restaurants?
For sure.
Are there bottles, cans, like...
Yeah, the distribution economics have changed over the last few years, so it's a little tougher for us. On draft, you can find us around town in lots of different places. And then in cans, you can find Fog Lights. It's back. I think Plaza Liquors has it. I'm trying to get back into the grocery stores, but beer is kind of shrinking and the grocery stores are devoting less space to it. So Fog Lights, Hazy IPA, you can find. I'm trying to get back into Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and those places, but you know, ask for it, please, so we can try and get back in. But on draft, you can find us all over town. Usually Fog Lights, Victory or Death, or Belly Tank Blonde. Those are the three that kind of go out. Oh, and Superleggera Italian Pilsner. That's one of my personal favorites. And That's on in a few places as well.
I love a nice Pilsner style beer, but it's so unusual to find because it takes so much longer to brew than your ale style beers that you just don't see a lot of local breweries do Pilsners.
Yeah, they take longer in the tank and they don't allow you to hide your work. So you gotta hit it right. In fact, I'll do a little plug for Time Market because Superleggera Italian Pilsner is on tap there permanently. So if you want one of those, that's a good spot to go.
Yeah, Peter Wilkie, owner of Time Market. Yep. Great guy over there, Peter.
Yep, and car guy. We got a lot in common.
Yeah, without a doubt. And he had Rincon Market for many years as well, too.
Yeah, for sure.
And unfortunate to see, of course, that one, as Flores Market had announced their closure. We've got a Sonora House coffee shop, right, that's going to come and open up over there?
I don't know. I was going to ask you.
And then Sergio Pignon, a guest of Jump in Tucson, who is got a restaurant at Oracle and Ina called Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Cocktails. And it looks like they're going to do a collaboration in that space.
Oh, cool.
At 6th in Tucson. And so it's going to be coffee from Sonora House, and then it's going to be Redbird in that space now. So it's not going to be a market anymore.
Okay. Well, it's such a cool building. I mean, I'm just glad it's not being boarded up.
Without a doubt. I mean, character in spades, right? And I love that sort of character that breweries have, whether it be Barrio Brewing or Moto Sonora, I think's got, you know, really character in spades based on all of your life experiences that you've got to wrap up in this really cool, neat brewery. Are there other plans for expansion in any way, shape, or form?
I don't know. We've looked at a spot on the northwest side. I'm trying not to get too far ahead of myself. We're going to build a deli. We're going to build a sandwich shop in the space, and that's kind of what I'm focused on. I'm really focusing on our home space, and then once I get that off my plate, I will look at a possible expansion because we're sort of focusing on the hospitality part of this because the distribution part, the economics are so skewed, and there's only so many people who are going to be willing to drive downtown, so eventually I might have to reach out to the northwest or maybe the far east side of town to get some people who otherwise wouldn't come, but I got to sort of take care of my home first.
No, it makes total sense. So we're always talking local restaurants over here on The Morning Voice. Shoot our guests, our listeners, a few of your favorites. Like, where do you and your wife like to go out to eat here in Tucson?
Okay, well, for sure. I already mentioned Time Market, so I'll take that one off the table. Love the Charo Group. They usually don't miss with their stuff. I've got a seafood weakness, so we end up at Kingfisher a lot. And then, you know, honorable mention to Empire Pizza. You know, it's not really a fine dining spot, but, you know, more of just a takeout situation. But the bar in the back's really cool, too. And so I'd say those are my spots.
No, those are great guys. Dave Fermansky, Tom Brown over there have been bringing it for a long, long time. And it's great to see they're going to expand as well, too. They're working on building into the old Hydra space too. And so Empire's about to get a whole lot bigger and busier over here as well, too. Break down for our listeners where they can find Moto Sonora. Where are you guys located? Give us your social medias, the whole rundown over here, Jimmy.
Sure. So the brewery itself and beer garden is 1015 South Park Avenue. That's, you know, park just south of Broadway coming off of Euclid. Website is www.motosonora.com. Instagram at Moto Sonora Brewing. Our hours are 7 days a week, 12 to 10. And we have some kind of food all the time. But until we get the deli going, it's going to be a different truck or a different thing every time you show up. And I think that's about it. Oh, our anniversary party, 5 years. We're still alive. March 15th, we're going to do a motorcycle ride, leaving from the brewery, get there at 8, have coffee, tell some lies, and then hit the road around 9. Party starts at noon. We're setting up a dunk tank. So if you've got a good pitching arm and want to humiliate me, I'll be sitting up there. You can send me into the water. and we'll have music, and it should be a really, really good time. That's Saturday, March 15th.
That sounds awesome. 5-year anniversary. I salute you guys for making it in the first 5 years. You know, they say that, you know, 80% of restaurants don't make it inside of those first 5 years. And here you are having your 5-year anniversary, having opened up only 3 days before COVID. You're not only surviving, you are thriving in what is a difficult restaurant industry. Thank you again, Jeremy DeConcini, for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us.
Grant, thanks for having me. Anytime.
And for our listeners over there, like, hopefully you've found this to be enlightening and a great experience with an awesome operator, a fighter, a guy, the most interesting man in Pima County over here. Hopefully we'll have plenty of fights coming up between the United States and Canada for that Four Nations hockey game coming up tomorrow as well, too. All kinds of interest in that international game. It's been a great show and a great opportunity to spend Wednesday morning with you, our listeners. This has been Grant Kruger, your morning voice on 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk.